This year, the Review of Journalism turns 40.
Welcome to Reviewed.
Welcome to Reviewed.
Welcome to Reviewed, where we go through the past 40 years of the Review of Journalism to understand if the stories are still relevant and impactful today.
Join us as we ask,
are the issues still relevant?
Is the reporting controversial?
How has journalism changed over the years? After four decades on assignment,
it's time for the review
to be reviewed.
Welcome to the final episode of Reviewed. I'm your host, Mariana Schwitze.
And I'm Sahana Ranganathan. In this episode, we'll be talking about the role of media narratives in featuring and reporting on trans communities.
There are only a few stories in the Review of Journalism that look at how Canadian media has covered and featured the trans community. One of them is Alyssa Garrison's 2013 piece titled In Transition.
The piece explores the increased visibility of the trans community, their calls for change, and the insistence of media outlets to misreport on a community that they have little knowledge on.
My name is Alicia Lim. I am a professor of the humanities at York University. My students call me Dr. Lim. They're the best. And I go by they, them pronouns.
In Transition begins with a story about Dr. Lim's activism. As a well-known queer activist and artist, Lim hoped to implement they-them pronouns in an interview in 2011. Their interviewer, Extra, refused.
Culture has changed so much that this story feels very outdated, happily, now. So digging back into my emails, I found all these dates and names, and I found that I first had this interview in March 2011, and I was so excited about it. At the time, I had my first major art exhibit, The Illustrated Gentleman, and it was in the home of my local queer heroes, this amazing power couple, Allison Mitchell and Deirdre Logue, and they'd opened up their garage and they called it The Fag, the Feminist Art Gallery. And I was their inaugural show, so I was so stoked. And Extra interviewed me, and it was also the first time that I was using the pronoun they, or not the first time, but just really early in that. And it had just been sort of building traction at that time. Now, I guess this is 12 years ago, but not a lot of people were using it yet. And I was really inspired by my roommate who started first. And so, so I was kind of shy about it at the time. Now it's just like, blah, 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 pronoun they, whatever. But back then I was so shy. And so I said to the journalist, I'm going to use the pronoun they, feeling really nervous. And his answer was, oh, we're not going to do that. Anyway, so blah, 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 like, and moved right on. And the moment I kind of pushed back a little bit, I was like, oh, well, surely Extra observes trends, and this is kind of like a new trend in the culture. And he said, and I want to say, like, he was really smart and nice. I really enjoyed my time with him. But he just explained that it would be really challenging for him to use it, which sounds so funny and outdated now, but that was his experience. And he explained that he had, before interviewing me, he had interviewed a band where someone in the band used the pronoun they, and it was completely confusing for the audience, and they couldn't follow, like, when you say they, is this the band or is this the person? And he said after that, he would never repeat it again. And he said that he subsequently just, like, doesn't accept using the pronoun they, and that even if he tried to, he felt like his editors would probably try to push him and say things like, so come on, is it a he or a she? And looking back at the articles written at that time, I see that he was right. Like, the articles were so disrespectful. I mean, it's refreshing to be able to say that now. You know, at that time it was like, oh, you know, I can't dare ask for better. Like, what could I possibly deserve? I'm trying this experiment. Nobody should have to come along with me. But now, thank goodness, attitudes have changed and it just looks so disrespectful. Like, I looked back, and at that time I asked friends and fellow activists about their experiences, And there was a few other of my trans community members who told me about what had happened. Like, for example, someone named Olive Hershey was interviewed, and they had their they pronoun altogether dropped throughout the article. It just wasn't used. This is with Extra. And another named Scott Her had asked to use the they pronoun, and instead they just use a he pronoun. They just were like, whatever. And at that time, I was emailing back and forth with the journalist and with his editor and with another editor at Extra. I'd actually had like a long-standing relationship with Extra and some friends there. And my friend editors had sent me an email about another trans artist, and they were like, this is the kind of treatment you could have. Like, this is, we'll do this for you and it would be good. And it was an article about Mike Geeky, who is an awesome performance artist in Montreal. But it opened with what I thought was really disrespectful as well. the article opened with, in quotation marks, they are co-hosting an event in Montreal, blah, blah, blah. And they will prepare the audience for quite a few surprises. It was just so, I was like, I don't want to be treated like this. Like, my Kiki shouldn't be treated like this either. Like, why are we in quotation marks? It makes us sound like some kind of novelty act or something. So I want to say, to frame all of this discussion, I was told by another editor that they actually did have policy. They did have it in their style guide to use they. It's just that enforcing it, in the moment seemed to, it was hard to get editors and other journalists on board. And so that's, I think, what the original journalist who interviewed me was trying to say. He was saying, yeah, sure, it's a policy, but I'm going to get pushback. It's going to be really hard to do. Yeah, but I would love to hear your thoughts because this story seems so outdated now. What do you think?
When we were reading this piece, not only did this conversation feel outdated, but we were pretty surprised that it was Extra.
Extra is an online magazine that covers LGBTQ2S+ culture, politics, relationships, and health.
According to their site, as of 2024, they aim to break down boundaries, think outside the binaries, and build bridges within our communities and beyond.
But in 2011, it was a different story.
I went to Facebook and I didn't intend for this to be a big deal. I just posted, venting my frustrations to my friends in just like a one single post that said that I was kind of upset because I was told by Extra that they would not use my they pronoun and that there was a good chance that it might just be deferred to a she in the article. And I feel upset about this. And the response was immense. I guess that's just how community and subculture works. It might be slow in mainstream culture, but it's already such a, sensitive and passionate subject within marginalized communities. So the response was so massive that I thought I would be collecting, I don't know, like just a few responses, but it was going up to the hundreds immediately. So I wrote, "Dear Extra, I am grateful to you for a couple of reasons. You published a comic I was very proud of called Sweetest Taboo, and you've promoted me 3 times now. Thank you. But I've been told that it will be awkward for you to publish my pronoun as they, and you might defer to she. This is transphobic, but I don't want to just use big words. This is irrelevant. It's outdated. It's inaccurate. And as one of Canada's queer platforms, it's embarrassing. Please familiarize yourself with contemporary culture and adopt the pronoun they. Co-signed by the following." And I had 1,500 people co-sign it. Yeah, it was so huge. And that's, where this sort of blew up into kind of a cultural moment, I guess.
Andrea Houston is a journalist and activist who worked at Extra at the time, and she was interviewed for Garrison's piece.
Andrea Houston, journalist, currently managing editor for Ricochet Media. I also teach queer media here at TMU. I've been a journalist for about 20 years. I also involved in activism. I've worked in politics and in different civil society organizations. some of my background outside of journalism is I've done a lot of work in LGBTQ spaces, obviously, championing different pieces of human rights law.
In the article, she explained that she's used to starting every interview by asking her sources their pronouns.
I think it's so fundamental, right? It's when we sit down or when we engage with a source, they're trusting us. The source is putting a lot of trust in us. And so I think that's the base level of what we can do is to represent them fairly and honestly. And I think that begins with that question. How do you want to identify? How should I represent you in the story? Asking them not just their name, but how they spell their name. People spell their names differently, right? It's the same issue. It's about respecting your sources and respecting how they want to be identified. So that's the question. How do you want to be identified? What is your name? How do you spell your name? What pronouns do you use?
Now, to most, it's so normalized to ask someone their pronouns. It's something we are taught to do in journalism school. Houston explains that part of the reason this misreporting and misrepresentation happens is very systemic.
I think every reporter who grew up at the time that I came of age as a reporter, and obviously the generations before, we messed up. We messed up, we had to apologize, and we learned. And that's how I learned, was by making mistakes. Luckily, I never made any major mistakes in this regard, I'm very happy to say. But any mistakes that I did make, or any mistakes that ended up coming in print, let's put it that way, sometimes happen in the editing phase. So many of my journalism experiences have been in traditional mainstream newspaper newsrooms where you go and cover stories for the day and then you file a story and it's out of your hands after you leave for the day. And so it goes through, different copy editing desks and even a rewrite editor. When I was at the Star, there was a rewrite editor. And so what ends up in the paper, sometimes it looks very different, at least, the lead that you wrote sometimes changes if news changes. And so editors may take it upon themselves to change your writing, thinking maybe they're correcting an error. Maybe you didn't mean to, maybe you didn't write they by, maybe it wasn't an accident and it was supposed to be some other word. So I can speak from experience and I know that has certainly happened to me, but it's your byline on the top of that story. And so it regardless of what happened at the editing desk, it's you it reflects badly on. And so I think that the same response is called for, and that's an apology to your source. If it's a newspaper, a correction, published on the same page that the story ran, not buried deep in the back of the paper. And I think it's just a matter of learning and doing better the next time. We're in a moment right now in history that, we're all kind of learning things, that maybe we should have known already and that maybe, we should be actively doing better at. This is one of those things. Journalism is learning and it needs to, but it still needs to do better.
Across North America, there's been a wave of anti-LGBTQ2S+ policies and narratives. Earlier this year, Alberta Premier Danielle Smith proposed policies that actively spread misinformation and limit the rights of gender-diverse youth.
Some of the policies require schools to notify parents when a 16 or 17-year-old formally requests a name or pronoun change. Another policy proposes that any third-party material regarding gender identity, sexual orientation, and human sexuality needs to be approved by the Ministry of Education. The policies also ban gender reassignment surgery for those under the age of 17 and hormone therapy for youth under the age of 15, all in Alberta.
However, some doctors have denounced these policies, and there are many reports saying that gender-affirming care is life-saving.
Journalism can fuel misinformation that normalizes policies like this. For example, stories that focus on detransitioning often include misinformation on its prevalence and misconceptions about the gender transition process.
Our only currency is language. that is how we mark our work is the language that we use and we choose. I mean, there's power on both sides. We have power when we write a story. The quotes that we choose to use, the lead that we choose to write, the angle that we choose to take, what sources we're championing in that story, what sources we don't use. So we already make choices, right? We already make editorial choices in our writing. And we also already respect public figures who change their names. we have no issue writing about those name changes. So why is this such a problem? Was what I kept coming back to. And I think that for a lot of people, they started to see it as, you know, just another hurdle that we have to overcome in our overall understanding of how to be better in journalism, how to respect human rights more. And as far as LGBTQ people goes, you know, as we've seen over the last, you know, 10 years, this issue has only gotten more mainstream. And newsrooms and style guides and legacy publications and wire services have all come up to speed. I mean, that's the arc of progress that, you know, and frankly, in the newsroom at Extra at the time, those of us who were fighting this fight, we knew that this would happen. You know, even if you have no goals in life to be the kind of journalist that covers queer history or queer communities, you will at some point have to speak to a queer person. You will at some point probably have to interview a trans person. So, you know, it's important that we understand how to engage communities most respectfully, and to the best of our abilities, do what's right if we make a mistake. That should be fundamental, not just with queer communities, but all marginalized communities. But it's a really great way to learn that lesson is by through LGBTQ information.
Part of the importance here is that it's essential to create safe spaces for trans journalists in newsrooms. There needs to be trans journalists in leadership roles in order to challenge the status quo. Similar to our past episodes, we see this running theme of making more space for underrepresented voices to take on decision-making roles.
This way, with a larger diversity of voices in the decision-making process, we can potentially avoid many reporting issues that can be harmful.
After all, our own code of ethics as journalists call for us to minimize harm and be accountable for our mistakes.
Lim expresses that now their pronouns are very normalized and it's become common to talk about them in professional, personal, and journalistic contexts. But they question the root of the change. Does it generally seek to address the problem?
So our conversation started about me and my struggles to have the they pronoun established. But now that it is established and it's very easily established, to me, the story has changed in its significance. And how I just am so curious to know, what are the investments in certain issues being valued and other issues not? Like, to me, this isn't really a triumph of transgender respect. Instead, it's a triumph of something else. And I can't put my finger on what, like the investments that have thrived, you know, because of the pronoun they, whether it's institutions being able to sort of have a veneer of moral right, you know, in a very simple little gesture, like just like Mariana said, it's just language change. Is that why, you know, or is it to do with niche markets? Queers have money. I don't know, is that why? But to me, yeah, this story has changed to a question of really, I guess, broader investments in and disinvestments and such profound disinvestments in racialized communities.
Houston stresses that despite the emotional burden, it's important to keep pushing editors and news agencies to change.
And I think that journalists have to be combative to a certain degree. You have to defend your sources. You have to defend the most marginalized, even if that's in your own newsroom. And that might mean going up against editors who maybe don't understand you, don't understand concepts like intersectionality, don't understand colonialism. And yeah, that's a lot of unpaid emotional labor to have to do that. And it sucks, but it's really important to do that. And it's really important to be that. And if you are that type of person, like I am that type of person, I am that girl, that I think you have to be that person and you have to stick your neck out, whether that is defending LGBTQ people and sources, or that's starting a union and defending your coworkers and standing up for the rights of journalists and the marginalized wherever you go.
If you want to learn more about the review of journalism or other articles we've published, including Alyssa Garrison's In Transition, visit reviewofjournalism.ca.
And while you're at it, don't forget to check out our print issue of the Review of Journalism, coming to newsstands this May.
Thank you to Alicia Lim and Andrea Houston for talking to us today. And special thanks to Angela Glover, Daniela Olariu, and Lindsay Hanna for technical support.
Finally, thank you for listening to us over the past year. To connect with us, you can find us on TikTok and X at The Review of Journ.
This episode of Reviewed is hosted, edited, and produced by Sahana Ranganathan, Mariana Schwitze, and Lydia Reichen.